Hey guys, I'm having coffee with Scott and Adam on the walk off, and you're listening to Anthony Telford again, and we'll bring it back to you again sometime soon.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one.
Good morning and welcome to the walk-off. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by Adam Mack. Now, this is what we're doing for this cast here. We just finished up with former Montreal Expo pitcher and longtime off-season pitching coach of Nate Pearson, Anthony Telford. So we talked everything Rays and Jays and where everyone is in the standings and what's going on. And we talked baseball for about an hour and 10 minutes. So we're not going to get too much extra here. We'll just kind of throw to them. Of course, all of our guests are brought to you by yourrate.ca. Darren Brown, the mortgage broker, sure to help you get into that mortgage you're after, whether it is a new mortgage or you're just looking to extend or change your current one. yourrate.ca. All right, without further ado, we'll get to it. You can of course follow us on Twitter at Walkoff Podcast and on Instagram, the Walkoff Podcast. Enjoy Anthony Telford, everybody. Cheers.
Cheers.
So thrilled to have back, and I think it's safe to say friend of the show, former Montreal Expo, an all-around great guy, Anthony Telford. Welcome back to the walk-off, man. Thanks so much for taking the time.
My pleasure. Hey, guys. Hey, no kidding, man. I like getting up and talking to you guys in the morning. I got my Superman cup of coffee, so I'm ready to roll. What's going on?
Oh, buddy, we are so excited to talk some baseball with you here. Your takes and inside looks are always insightful and fun, so we're glad to have you back here. How's things been at the complex? You keeping busy?
Good, yeah. I got some really good players, and I have a blast doing it. Like, I like the mentoring part of it, so I have a really good time doing it. I had even during the COVID last year, I had 11 kids get scholarships. And then this year I got 10, and then this year I have 10 kids so far that have scholarship.
Right, so that's amazing.
Well, that's my funnest thing, right? Yeah. Is to look at people and go, hey, you know, the money that you spend is good. And listen, you know, not every kid's going to scholarship. And, you know, I have kids that you look at them and you're like, yeah, this kid's not making it out of Little League. But, you know, if I can get the kids to be as good as they can be, I'm good to go. I enjoy it. And then I have my upper end kids, you know, the guys that play pro ball and all that stuff. So that's good.
Well, last we spoke was a little before spring training, and here we are 6 months later, and oh man, what a baseball season. The AL wild card right now is, I mean, as a Jays fan, it's killing us.
Oh yeah. Nothing better than a little drama.
Right, a little drama, my goodness. So I do wish to talk to you about the Rays. I know that Tampa Bay is kind of the team you follow closely. I want to get your insight on some of the things going on with the Blue Jays and AL East. But it's funny because throughout the last 6 months, Adam and I on the podcast will be discussing something, and then one of us will be like, I wonder what Telly would think of this. So we've kind of kept a list of things we were curious of your opinion about. So I figured we'd start with that.
Okay, let's go. Let me hear what your list is.
Okay, so the first one is, and I want to talk about Alek Manoah of the Blue Jays, 23-year-old kid, forced his way onto this starting rotation, dominating in AAA. He's been great, right? He's probably going to get some Rookie of the Year votes. But it's funny, because a lot of pundits, and I mean, frick, Adam and I were even on this side a little bit. When he got called up, we were worried that he was being called up too soon. And boy, did he prove all of us wrong. You're on the coaching side of things. How do you know if a kid is ready for the next step? Because you can really mess a kid up if you bring him up too soon and he fails.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, you know, he's gonna, because there's a thing called video. And, you know, the rest of the league likes to study that stuff too. So, you know, when you call a kid up, the immediacy of it, they usually are pretty successful, because it's almost like catching the rest of the league by surprise, right? But after the video, if this kid's, you know, he's made 10 starts and, you know, he's pretty solid for 8 of them or 9 of them, it starts to look and smell and act like it's supposed to. It's probably it. So, you know, this kid, I watched him in AAA because, of course, I was following Nate a little bit, right, which I want to talk about a little bit.
He's on the list.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's going to be an interesting conversation. But I watched this kid and I was like, holy cow, this kid's dealing. And the International League is a really tough league to pitch in because you have all kinds of different things happening. It's very cold. It's very cold in that league. And, you know, he's in Buffalo. And it's cold. And if you can pitch in that cold weather, you get to a dome where it's 72 degrees and it's feeling pretty good. Then you got to remember, too, you get to the big leagues and, you know, everybody's pretty good. The guys on your team are pretty good. So, you know, the plays get made that don't normally get made. And so, you know, kids like Manoah, you bring them up and it's really interesting. It's like riding the wave. Like when you bring kids up, you're not bringing them up after 4 losses in a row. You bring them up after 6 good starts in a row. So the kids are really cruising, and that wave, they ride that wave for a while. So I'm interested to see what happens, but I like the way the kid pitches. I really do. I like his aggressiveness inside the strike zone, and he's fun to watch, man. He's a good young player.
It's always impressive to see a young kid fearlessly pitch inside too, which is one thing that's always stood out to me about Manoah. He has no fear about going inside on a hitter.
Well, when you get to the big leagues, if you can't pitch inside, you're not going to play very long. You know, I mean, it's simple. I you know, when I got to the, when I pitched inside when I was a minor leaguer with the Orioles, and I got to the big leagues and nobody would call anything inside and it hurt. Yeah. I learned to pitch inside later in the big leagues when I was in Montreal, because Felipe Alou loved pounding guys inside. And when I got to go back inside and really get in there, it helped feature the rest of my stuff. So yeah, pitching inside is huge. And if you want to survive, man, you got to get in there and you can't be scared to go in there.
So one of the things we talked about at the top of before spring training here with sticky stuff and just your thoughts on it in general. And then Major League Baseball out of nowhere mid-season has a full on crackdown. The whole thing is, I mean, first of all,
it's absurd.
Spider tack doesn't sound like something that should be on the ball. Like if they found a happy medium, right? Because they really outlawed spider tack. They also outlawed rosin and sunscreen together, which seems like going too far. So I'm curious your thoughts on that. And while you get into that, I also want you to touch on what Tyler Glasnow had to say about it. Of course, he winds up with Tommy John injury. Season ending, comes out and says he blames the midseason crackdown. How do you feel about that?
Well, he's wrong. He's wrong. He didn't blow out because he didn't have spider tech. That's BS. He blew out because he throws every single pitch absolutely as hard as he freaking can. Right. So, you don't blow out because you can't grip a ball. That's BS. When he said that, I'm like, that's a young kid saying something stupid. You know, listen, at this level, when you throw 98 miles an hour every single pitch, at some point, you're going to have an issue. You know, he has no feel for any of his stuff. Everything's max effort. So, yeah, that was a stupid comment on his part.
He was more just frustrated and wanting to leave the league, right?
He was frustrated. He wants to blame this, blame that. Listen, you know, people been using things forever, okay? Now, the problem is in society, we don't – for some reason, and I don't know why, sports want to take everything to the absolute max level. Like you take a situation where when I was coming up, I used rosin. I didn't use any sticky stuff because you're outside, you're sweating, you use the rosin. Hey, that's good enough. But this goes back to the analytical stuff, right? So if I'm being judged on my spin rate, okay, and there's a substance out there, that's going to help me spin the ball 3,000 RPMs. I'm going to use it because they don't care where I throw it. They just care about how hard it is, how much it's spinning. So you take a situation where there's something that you need to have. And I'll tell you, just on a side note right now, you watch what happens this playoff in the cold weather, how many guys are going to get plunked. It's going to be, you're going to see an enormous amount of guys getting smoked, and it's just stupid. When I went to Montreal in that dome, it was 68 freaking degrees. And I mean, in the middle of the summer, you're in a jacket and long sleeves in that dome, and you literally can't grip a baseball. They don't even rub them up anymore with good Mississippi mud. They just go out there. Those balls are freaking white. And I'm just like, holy cow, I know these kids can't touch a ball. They can't hold the ball. So Major League Baseball, like they always do, they let it get entirely out of hand. Right. And then they backtrack and go, okay, that's it. Nothing. What they should have done is say something like, okay, guys, here's what we're going to do. If it's 60 degrees or hotter, or 65, okay, you can use rosin only. Listen, guys, if it's under 65 degrees and you can't grip, here's what you can use, and give them something.
Yeah, a regulated substance.
Right? And then give them a substance that every single person in the league can use. You can't keep it on your person. You can use it in between innings. You can't put it on your hat, whatever. But there was a way to do it that wasn't asinine, and Manfred decided to be asinine again. And it kills me. You know, I haven't been to a game. I hardly watch. Because I see the state of the game. I see what they're doing with these stupid rules, and baseball purist guys I'm just scratching my head going, who the heck is holding the brain? Because apparently they're drop kicking it all over the office.
Well, this is one thing Adam and I were going off about when it originally was put in place. Was, can we not find a happy medium between a substance you can hang a cinder block off your hand with and like outlawing rosin and sunscreen? Like, it just seems, yeah. What?
Well, go ahead.
I like that idea of like, here's your substance, put it on between innings, and then you can't reapply it during the inning. I think that's great.
Yeah, once you get out there and you have something sticky on you, and trust me, I know what I'm talking about.
Right.
You know, once you have something sticky on you, the rosin is good enough. The problem with the rosin is when there's no moisture, when there's no nothing, there's nothing for the rosin to stick to. It just falls off your fingers.
Right.
If I sat here right now in Florida and I rubbed my fingers together and got a little bit of moisture, and then I touch rosin, my fingers are going to be sticky. And it's plenty. But like I said, with the advent of the Rapsodo, the spin rates, and you go, hey, this sticky stuff increased my spin rate. Let's see how sticky we can make it. And then it's completely out of hand. Yeah. Instead of just going, okay, look, guys, my problem with the game is they know that this stuff is going on almost immediately. When you have pitchers that go to Houston and they increase their spin rate by 1,500 revolutions, you got to go, hey, what are they doing in Houston?
Yeah.
Okay, what are they doing in that dome where all of a sudden all their guys are spinning the ball way better than everybody else in the league? You know, and then let me say this, okay? Now, the guys they've readjusted, okay? They're not using the stuff. They're getting checked in between innings, and their spin rates are back down to normal. But what's happening? The pitchers who are good are still good.
Yeah.
Right? The guys that can spin the ball can still spin the ball. I got a guy that I'm training right now. I'm trying to get him back to the big leagues. A guy named Samuel Dyson. You guys remember him? Because Jose Bautista. Yeah, because Jose Bautista took him deep. Well, Sam is 34. He went through a surgery. Okay. And I haven't seen him since I worked with him the year that he went to the big leagues in Miami. I haven't seen him in like 6 years. So he calls me and he goes, hey, I need some mechanical stuff, man. So we've been working every week together. Okay. Now he's in my shop. I have only rosin and he spins his freaking slider. No kidding. 3000 RPMs.
Wow.
He's got the strongest fingers, man. And his spin rates they're amazing. They're amazing. And he doesn't use anything. And I know he's not because he's in my shop. Yeah. So, you know, there's guys that can spin it and guys that can't. And if you create scenarios where the average guy can get a leg up according to the numbers that wouldn't any other way. And so they'll cheat to do it.
So I think that's a great point then. You know, guys like Garrett Cole, maybe there was a dip, they're back. What do you do, like, as a pitching coach, if you had someone come in who was pitching well with sticky stuff,
yeah,
and then after the crackdown, statistically kind of fell apart? I mean, Blue Jays fans know of someone in particular in our bullpen that seemed to happen to. But if someone mm-hmm. like this came to you and was like, look, help me. How do you go about fixing that? Someone who was just an average pitcher, who was performing well above average with sticky stuff. How do you fix it now, or can you with a guy like that?
It's kind of like a hang with it, right? I mean, you know, if you were mediocre before and you were a bubble guy and you needed that stuff to get over the edge and now they took the stuff away, I mean, you have to figure something out. There's not much you're going to be able to do, but that's what makes the game great. The guys that are good, that don't cheat, are going to be good no matter what. If you're going to cheat to be good, and then you need to be weeded out. You know, I mean, it is what it is. Like, I played in the steroid era, and we talked about this, right? I played against so many guys that would have never made it had they not done stuff. You know, and it's, again, I had a very mediocre career, but I take pride in the fact that I was clean for my entire time competing against those guys. And so, you know, if you got a kid that, you know, he can't use fighter tack and now he can't spin it,
maybe
he is who he is. I mean, you got to take what he can do or just get him out of there. I mean, I hate to say it like that, but it is what it is. There's somebody there that can spin it and play without the stuff. You just got to find out who it is now instead of letting people do stuff.
Absolutely, and it does kind of go to show you how close AAA guys are to being superstars in the major leagues. Because you look at, like, just, like, going to the steroid thing, right? Or even just spider tack. Like, if these fringe guys all of a sudden are stars just with little tiny, like, it's crazy. No wonders guys push the limits. Like,
well, yeah, but again, they can push the limits because they don't regulate anything until it's too freaking late.
Yeah,
you know, they just, I mean, my first pine tar rag, Don Sutton gave it to me in Brave spring training in 94. He's like, hey kid, I like your curveball. Here, I got something for you. And he gives me this little, you know, piece of terry cloth towel, and it's taped up and it's got a little hole in it. And it's like a pine tar on it. And I'm like, hey, what's this? And he goes, what do you mean, what's this? He's like, that's pine tar. He goes, it'll help you with your breaking ball. I was like, oh, okay. You know, thanks, man. You're a Hall of Famer. Thank you. I appreciate that. So, as a matter of fact, I'll tell you what, I'll go get it next time that we're on. I'll bring it from downstairs. It's in one of my bags upstairs. I still have it. I should have had the guy sign it. Oh my God, you should see that thing. It's crazy. But you know, when this stuff happens, I feel for guys like, hey, I get it. But you know, now, hey, let's bring the field back to where it's supposed to be with spin rate. You know, there's not very many people that can spin the ball 3000. So the elite guys that could do it, let them be elite.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't, not everybody that's mediocre gets to be freaking elite. You know, it's that thing from the Incredibles show. I watch Incredibles with my kids and my wife and all that. And the dad the mom goes, "Hey, are you going to Jack's graduation?" And he goes, "He's going from the fifth grade to the sixth grade." Yeah. And he goes, "It's just another way to celebrate mediocrity." and I, when I heard that, I was like, wow, that's so good. You know, we celebrate mediocre people and mediocre things instead of celebrating greatness.
Well, I'm so glad that it worked, because I mean, my goodness, with all the spin rate stuff, they were talking about doing insane things like moving the mound back and like,
oh,
you know, piling rules on top of things when all they had to do was address one little thing. Like,
yeah. And I'll tell you what, the mound rule is not working out well.
No,
no, it's not working out well. And the strike zone rule is not working out well either. I had one of my guys called me from Indy Ball in the Atlantic League, and they moved the mound back and they had the automated strike zone. They had 18 walks. Wow. In a game in Indy Ball, 18 walks. And they say the games take forever because the umpire sits there just watching the game. And then they talk to him in his earpiece, like, "That was a strike." And he's like, "Oh, strike." They go, it's terrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
We've actually talked to a couple guys in the Atlantic League, and they were just frustrated. They're just like, none of these rules are going to be implemented. They're like,
no.
We don't even know why we're being used as guinea pigs right now. They already know they're not going to do these rules.
Yeah.
It would sure be frustrating as a guy where like your entire lifelong dreams and your career, your livelihood is on the line. And now during like the most crucial part of your development, and they're just like, "Well, let's just fuck around for a bit and see what happens."
Yeah. Well, but you know, again, they're not doing that to their guys, man. They're doing it to independently guys who either have had a chance or they're trying to get there or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And most of those guys need to, you know, grow up and get real jobs and stuff. I mean, that's just such a tough road to take. There's very, very few guys that accomplish anything going that route. But, you know, again, it's an avenue where, for guys that I know and work with that have gotten released for one way or another, it's a great avenue to keep playing. But then it's also an avenue for guys who have been mediocre to kind of keep playing instead of being good and getting signed and all that. So I got my thoughts on that, but you know, it is what it is.
Well, I've heard one issue with this robo ump strike zone too. I know you mentioned how much longer it takes, even if it's an extra couple seconds per pitch, right? That really adds up over
it's 15 minutes by the end of the game. Yeah.
But
in a game where they're desperately trying to shorten it, like,
right? Exactly.
Yeah.
But one thing with this strike zone is that it's shifted the entire strike zone down, essentially, or is it up? Where like a curveball that in the past has dipped and caught the strike zone and would have been called a strike forever, you know, now because it's not crossing the plate essentially at the same spot, even though the catcher catches it right here. Now that's a ball. And then the same thing at the bottom of the strike zone where, you know, it's down in the dirt, would have been called a ball for ages, is now being
now it's a strike.
And everybody's lost as to what am I supposed to swing at or.
Yeah. I mean, it's stupid.
It's silly.
I mean, what are we going to do? Next question. Let's
move on.
Let's go.
So about a week ago, the Tampa Bay Rays announced that they will be unveiling a sign incorporating the Montreal Expos logo with the Tampa Bay Rays logo during the playoffs at Tropicana, and that they plan on splitting home games between the two markets. And then they backtracked on that and said, "We're not going to release a sign," and things are all up in the air and you don't know where it's going. Do you think there's any chance of this? Like, you played the game as a player.
No shot.
Would it bother you to split home games? Like, it seems like so much extra travel. They're just trying to put pressure on getting a stadium, right? Yeah, okay.
That's what they're doing. There's logistically no way. Like, you talk about a team who's trying to save money, right? Mm-hmm. How do you make players have houses in two spots? How do you justify now, instead of 80 games at home, 80 games and 81 games at home, okay, with your player in his house or whatever that he's paying for, now you're going to split that, okay, and you're going to make a guy stay in a hotel an extra 40 games a year, and you have to pay for the hotel. How's that saving money? That's spending money. How about travel? I mean, how about security? How about the fact that, you know, you got to go through border patrols and agents? And I mean, getting, you know, when we were in Montreal, and you guys know, for the Blue Jays, you got to go through customs every single time. Yeah. You're going to go through customs 9 million times in 1 year. It's just going to suck. There's no way that any of that happens. I mean, they would lose the team here 100%. Like, okay, so you're already telling me that you're going to move, and you already have trouble getting people to your park. And by the way, just a side note, people are spoiled brats. Like, it literally, I live across the bridge, okay? It literally takes me 35 minutes to drive to the stadium.
Wow.
At the end, it takes me 35 freaking minutes to drive home. It's nothing. It's 100% highway. And oh, by the way, 9 miles of it is over beautiful water. Okay. I mean, it's a gorgeous drive.
Yeah.
And the stadium is not bad. There's not a bad seat inside the stadium. And it's
as if that's not enough, it's also the best team in baseball.
Yeah, and it's the best team. They get the best record in baseball. I mean, what the hell's wrong with you? You know, if you're complaining about it, there's no way. I mean, and I feel like this. And again, I loved my time in Montreal. It was very, very special. Very special. I can't tell you how special it was for somebody that played 8 years in AAA to play 6 years in the big leagues and five of them right there in Montreal. I can't tell you how much I love and appreciate all that. Now, that being said, if you lose a team for a reason, whatever the reason is, you should never get a team again. That's just you, no. Why? Listen, here's what's going to happen in Montreal. They'll get a team and they'll pack it out the first five games, and then it's going to go right back to what it was inside of a year. Inside of a year, you'll be in September, you'll have this team, and they're not going to come to the stadium. And I love the people in Canada, but you can't be butthurt over 1994 the rest of your life. Okay, you just can't do it. So you can't tell me that stuff's gonna matter. It's just not gonna.
And so, if you're gonna play in front of an empty stadium, just stay in Tampa.
Like, yeah. I mean, the weather's 100 times better. You know.
All right. Well,
so, yeah, it ain't happening.
Two questions there. First of all, you basically just let Tampa off the hook with this stadium. Oh, the drive isn't that bad. The stadium isn't that bad. How do you fix baseball in Tampa Bay then? Let's say money. Let's say money was no object.
They're putting a winning team on the field.
How do you get fans to come out in Tampa Bay?
Well, that's the magic question. I mean, you got to remember the demographic here in Florida. The Marlins don't do well. I mean, it's a place where there's so much to do. Okay, that. Going to stay indoors and watch a baseball game is down on the priority list. I mean, you got water sports, the beach, it's a tourist destination. I mean, if you look at the team, like you go to New York City and the Yankees are an institution, so you can't really use them, right? You go to Cleveland, Ohio, you know, where they get people. You go to the stadiums where they get a bunch of people, and you go to St. Louis. I mean, what is there to do in St. Louis? You have the hill. I mean, St. Louis is a beautiful place. You can go eat Italian food all day long. But outside of that, it's like, hey, that's the best game in town. Yeah. So, you know, that's the tough part that they'll never be able to answer. The demographic where they're at and this, the people. And if you go like this, if you sit here and go, okay, here's what we're going to do. If we don't get a million fans next year, like we're moving the team, you guys get one shot. They'd get a million because people still want them there. It's just a matter of convenience, you know? So if you're a real good fan, if you're a really good fan and you love the game of baseball, then you'll go watch these guys. And they have 25,000 of those people. You know, the problem is they don't cater. If you don't cater to the casual observer or corporate America, then that's where you lose your revenue. The Rays aren't losing money. Sternberg's in New York doing very well. Their payroll's not very high. They got a contender. They got a good TV deal. You know, they're not losing money. They're just being greedy.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you build a new stadium here outside, you lose half your games because of the rain.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's if they put a stadium just from where I live in Odessa, right. If they put a stadium in Ybor City or out by the fairgrounds, where, by the way, it's some of the only land that's really kind of available, unless they knock down the Yankees spring training stadium and all that stuff. If they put it out there, it would take me as long to get there, and it's on the same side of the bridge as the drive to St. Pete.
Well,
so it's
let's get into the Rays then, because like this is a team that's been, I mean, despite all the pundits and baseball analysts' best predictions at the start of the season, I mean, they watched the Rays move on from Blake Snell, move on from Charlie Morton, watched Tyler Glasnow go down with a Tommy John surgery halfway through the season.
And you got 97 wins. Yeah.
97. How are they doing this? I mean, I guess, honestly, Anthony, if you can answer this, there's probably 29 other teams who would want you in the front office. But what is Tampa Bay doing right?
Well, here's what Tampa Bay does good, in my opinion. The guys that they do have, they're great kids. They're quality people. The part that's hard for a fan is nobody knows who's on the team. Okay. So people identify with people, you know, I mean, you think of the Orioles, who's comes to mind? Baltimore Orioles, who comes to mind? Cal Ripken Jr.
Yeah.
Right. You think of the Yankees, who comes to mind? Derek Jeter, you know, think of the Cincinnati Reds, who comes to mind? Barry Larkin, like guys, Tony Gwynn in San Diego. I mean, when I was playing, those guys were institutions for their team. Tampa, their business model, their playing model, it works because they plug in a bunch of really good players, okay? But nobody knows who they are. Like, I couldn't tell you who's in the damn bullpen because it changes all the time. And from a player standpoint, it makes it very hard to go to Tampa because you know you're going to be one and done. You know, you're not going to have any stability here. If you're in the bullpen here and you're a young guy, you're going to play here for 2 years and then you're going to be gone. They're going to get rid of you before arbitration. So, you know, the business model works from a playing standpoint, but from a marketing standpoint, it doesn't work. That's what most of the problem is. Now, you guys in Toronto have an interesting situation, right? You have about five really good young players. Really good, really, really good. And your fans are falling in love with them. And when you get rid of one, they're going to be pissed off. You know,
riots.
So when Vladimir Guerrero's contract comes up and you have to extend him by 10 years or whatever it's going to be, people are going to be freaking hot. If you look at them and you go, hey, financially, like, we can't do it.
Yeah.
And they'll move on from them and they'll go, hey, we got Biggio and we got all these guys, you know, and we got Bichette and we got all these players. We're still good. And they're going to be pissed and you'll lose fans over that kind of stuff. It is what it is. It's the catch 22 of what the Tampa Bay Rays are doing. Now on the field, they plug in really good players who are really athletic. They're almost like a National League style team. Mm-hmm. They got a bunch of really good players. They don't have very many sluggers. They did get Nelson Cruz, but they got some good players. They have a good clubhouse, and that's what happens when you have great chemistry, is you can win. And they got a bunch of guys that just come out of the pen and throw gas. and just enough sprinkled in of little thumber guys like Yarbrough who come in and they change the dynamic of the game for five innings and then you can't catch up. And but they do a good job of that. They do a good job on the baseball field. They do a good job.
And I love that you just brought up Nelson Cruz, because this is the type of deal at the deadline the Tampa Bay Rays don't do. They don't go out and get a player that's they're going to take on money for. How big do you think that was to that team to see the management actually be like, you know what, we're going to do it. We're going to go and get Nelson Cruz.
Well, when you're on a team, okay, and you're sitting there and they do a move like that, you kind of look around the locker room like, holy cow, like they want to win, man. And you know, you plug a guy like that in who walks in with 20 years in the game and he knows how to carry himself. He knows how to do his work. The experience is invaluable. That's what they did with Charlie Morton last year, you know. And how about this? I texted Charlie the other day and I said, hey, I'm still following your career. It's so good to see you. You know, he threw this game the other day for the Braves. And I go, you know, they're not going to let you retire if you keep throwing 97 and getting everybody out. He's been trying to retire for 3 years.
Yeah.
But they keep throwing 20 million at him. How can you turn it down?
Of course.
But that's the point. Like, you get guys like that and you infuse a locker room with that kind of a presence and it elevates everything. Mm-hmm. Elevates everything. And that's that Tampa did a good job doing that finally. You know, they in the past they've said, hey, we got to stand pat with who we have, and they have, and then they lost. You know, this year it looks to me like they're like, hey, like we're gonna win a World Series. Like, let's try and win a World Series. Yeah. So I everybody here is pumped, man. Everybody here is pumped.
No, you should be. It's an incredible team. Sorry, Adam, do you want to?
No, let's talk, because I mean, Tampa Bay has a couple young superstars on their roster too. What do you think are the chances that a guy like a Randy Arozarena or a Wander Franco gets any sort of a contract out of Tampa Bay? Or are they gone too as soon as they hit arbitration?
I think they're gone. Yeah, I just think Sternberg won't do it.
That's wild.
That's just my opinion, and that's,
no, you're probably right.
Record. You know, if they were going to do it, the thing that they did early when they had Crawford and Baldelli and Longoria was, yeah, they locked those up to small 5-year club friendly deals early.
Right.
And these two guys, they haven't done it. So it leads me to believe that there's something there that they don't want to do. I mean, you know, if these guys stay healthy again this year and then in the offseason they get 5-year deals or something, then maybe they do it. But they don't do long term. No. They do club friendly, you know, short term deals. And if you're a player, like if I was a young player and somebody threw 5 years, $25 million at me, I would sign that paper so damn fast.
Yeah.
and blow on the ink to make sure it dries. Because, you know, again, I'm 55 years old now. I have it's pretty funny. I have my pension papers in front of me and I'm like, okay, when do I want to take my major league pension? Do I want to keep doing what I'm doing now? Do I want to wait till I'm 62? These kids don't think like that, but they should, because it matters. But, you know, you put $10 million in the bank as a player, and then you play another 10 years, like you're done. You're done. Mm-hmm. You're good.
Yeah.
You know, and if Sternberg does those kinds of things for 3 or 4 of the guys and they lock it up, it should be fun in Tampa Bay. The only problem is they can't do it with the pitching that they have, I don't think. So you have to, because of the way they run through pitchers, I don't see them giving anybody a 3-year deal or a 4-year deal. Mm-hmm. I just don't see it.
Okay,
so we'll see.
Let's switch organizations here and talk the Blue Jays really quickly. I do want your opinion on this, because the Blue Jays, and this was an interesting stat I literally just found out a few days ago, but and it surprised me, because especially with George Springer and Marcus Semien at the top of this batting order, but They have the third youngest batting order behind only Cleveland and Baltimore, the Toronto Blue Jays do. How big of a deal is that? Like, how much does youth and lack of experience play into wins and losses? Because everyone keeps talking about this core and the fact they might still need more seasoning. You know, they're all 22, 23, 24-year-olds. Does that play into it? Is this team maybe a little young?
Well, no, I don't think so. Okay. Not this team. And the reason why I don't think so is because of the pedigree that most of these kids
have. Their dads, right.
Okay? Their dads all, you know, when Toronto did this, I looked and I was like, they literally plucked kids from three Hall of Famers and said, we're going to gamble that their genes are the same. and it's paying off. So these kids were raised in the clubhouse. There's no shock and awe for these kids. They're, you know, I think Bo Bichette said something about it. Like when he first got to the big leagues, he said, I feel like I'm home. Like he walked around a major league clubhouse his whole life. And he's like, yeah, this is where I'm supposed to be. Like, where else would I be? So I don't think that these kids are overwhelmed. Bo hit a really big home run the other night to win a game.
Very close.
And he you know, the youthful jubilation of watching these kids play is what's fun. Pro guys, you know, grizzled vets, they go out there and they win because they know how to win. These kids are winning because this doggone stuff is fun. You know, they're having fun doing it. So I don't think anybody that says that they think that team's too young are idiots. They're not paying attention. You know, now I don't know if they pull out there, you know, if you're in another division, you're slotted already.
Yeah.
You know, you guys are in a tough division with a team that's got a, you know, $250 million payroll. And then another team who's just as full of good young players as you. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you take away New York and Tampa, and Toronto's in the playoffs already. So, you know, this battle is really good. I love the Toronto New York battle right now. I just love it. You know, it's great. It's great for baseball and how exciting everything is. And honestly, like I said, I haven't watched a lot of games, but I watched this series. And it was such a fun series to watch, you know, so it was great.
I want your opinion on, let's go the other way here. I know we just talked about all the youth and inexperience on this Jays team, but Marcus Semien did something this free agent offseason that very few do at 30 years old when there's multi-year deals available to you. He bet on himself and took a one-year deal, and my goodness, he's become the highest home run hitting second baseman of all time, hitting his fourth. Like,
yep.
He's just been unbelievable. And the fact he's going to play, Anthony, 162 games this year, I think people don't really give him enough credit for his durability and what he's doing. How do you feel about Marcus Semien?
I like him. I liked him when he was over there on the other coast.
Yeah.
I like the way he goes about his business. You know, he's just a kid who goes out there and plays good baseball. And I mean, if I was Toronto, I would make a shift. You know, I know you guys got some young guys there that you like, but this is a kind of a guy that, you know, I know he's getting ready to break the record, the home run record for a second baseman. However, you know, he was pretty consistent in Oakland. You know, he was pretty consistent. So you're going to get 25 out of that guy all the time, every year. He's going to wake up and hit 25. So, you know, you got a guy like that at second base. You know, I played against a guy that was like that, that I'll tell you right now, for 100%, the guy's a Hall of Famer, and he had some time right there in Toronto with you guys, Jeff Kent. Right. That guy was a 25, 30 home run guy every freaking year, and he even hit more than that. I mean, he's leads – all-time home run hitting second baseman, Jeff Kent. How's he not in the Hall of Fame? And this was a guy that protected Barry Bonds. You know, Barry Bonds was a great player. But let me tell you, man, I faced those two guys back-to-back all the time, and it sucked. You know, because it sucked. You got a guy there that can hit bombs like that at second base. And it flows over to the rest of the team exponentially. mm-hmm. when you get home runs out of a position that you don't get home runs out of. So, yeah, I like Semien. I think that, you know, he's been a solid player for 5 or 6 years, and I don't see how he's not going to be a solid player for the next 3 years. So maybe you want to
front office. Do you pay him?
Yeah, I would pay him. I would give him. I would give him a 3-year deal. I would give him and go, hey, look, here's what we see. We want to give you a 3-year deal, and you know, go ahead and pay him. Pay him top dollar for 3 years. I wouldn't give him. He's not a 10-year deal guy. No. Everybody thinks they need a 10-year deal. He's a 3-year deal guy. But I would give him 3 more years. Wouldn't you want to see him hitting in Toronto for 3 more years?
I hope.
Holy cow.
Absolutely.
Playing 162 games. I mean, yeah. Yeah. I want to wake up and walk to the park, and I want to see Marcus Semien penciled in, because I know that sucker's going to be there every single day. And I don't have to even think about the position.
Yeah. Well, you know,
there's something to be said for that, isn't there? 162. Like that, just being able to do that is crazy.
Yeah, when you got a guy that can play 155 or more games out of 162, and you wake up in April and you go, hey, we're going to spring training, and oh, by the way, shortstop in Baltimore is taken care of for the next 10 years. Cal Ripken Jr. is not coming out of a game. When you got a guy that can do that and play 155 games a year at the big league level. And you go, hey, who do we need on our bench? Well, we don't need anybody that can play second, because we got one there, you know, so we can plug somebody in second for 10 games a year. And it just makes it so good. It makes it so good when you get all these athletic guys that are hurt all the time, and you go, well, we're going to have a shortstop, or we're going to have a second baseman. We're going to have them for 61 games. I mean, you have to staff your team so much differently. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it's hugely important to have a guy that plays 150 games over the course of his career every year. Yep, for sure.
All right, my man, let's talk Nate Pearson here. Because
okay.
Last night, the kid was firing. He hit 102 miles an hour, which, by the way, is the fastest pitch ever tracked by a Blue Jays pitcher was last night, Nate Pearson.
Really?
Not bad.
He went 2 innings, firing gas. Now, obviously, you've been working with Nate since he was 14.
Right.
As tantalizing as Nate Pearson is out of the bullpen, I mean, this kid's still
going to be
next year, right?
You're going to be surprised at what I'm about to tell you. Okay. Go ahead.
I'm just curious where you are on this.
So, okay, so Toronto sent out a tweet, and I got it from his agent. A couple of weeks ago, and Toronto sent out the tweet that said he's in the top 5% in the major leagues in velocity. Oh, by the way, he's in the bottom 13% in command. So Toronto already sent out a tweet. It's on the phone, but they already sent out a tweet kind of setting something up. Now, Nate did not come to me last year. So I didn't see him. He's been locked up really with the driveline stuff and the analytics and all that stuff. And I think it's been detrimental. He's cutting himself off, and his command has not been what Nate Pearson's command should be. When Nate was coming out of high school, and it's not even close, he had the best fastball command of anybody I've ever seen, period, that age, throwing 92 to 94. Best fastball command. His senior year in high school, I think he walked 7 guys and struck out 109 in like 60 innings. He never used to walk people, ever. And I know that his whip this year is almost 2, if it's not 2. So he's been struggling with command, and it's because he's cutting himself off. And I talked to his agent, and we're going to be doing some work together this offseason trying to get his stride back out. To where it's supposed to be, to free him up. Now, this is my personal opinion, because I know Nate. If he gets his stride back out to where he's supposed to, and his body is allowed to do what it wants, you guys might have an all-star next year, whether it's in the pen or starting. I believe that with all my heart. all my heart. And again, I'm hard on pitchers. I'm hard on pitchers because I was a mediocre one, so I want to make myself look better all the time, right? By the time I'm old and retired, I might have thrown 99 miles an hour. I don't know. As I get older, the velocity seems to go up. But with Nate, his somewhere along the line with all the analytical stuff, he lost his way when it came to competing, and just looking at a guy and going, like, there's no way I'm giving you a piece of candy. You're not getting a walk. So I think that he is back in that direction and being aggressive again. And it's something that young kids go through all the time. When you've never tasted adversity, and then you taste adversity, it takes time to learn how to get over the hump. I remember coming out of high school, I dominated. Coming out of college, I dominated. I dominated A ball. I dominated double A. I got to triple A, and everybody was as good as me. And it was hard as hell. I remember there were nights in Rochester, New York in 1991 where I walked my dog until her feet were bleeding. And I'm sure God turned me off because he was tired of hearing me complain. So, you know, you go through those kinds of things. When you come out the other end and you go, okay, wait a minute. Everybody that I talked to before I signed was right. I should never change my what I'm doing because I haven't failed. A lot of times when you get to pro ball, you change things before you fail. So you don't know what to do when you do fail anyway. You understand what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I go through it all the time with guys that get drafted. They go to a team and then they send me video and some clown ass pitching coach is changing everything they're doing. And they haven't even given up a hit in pro ball yet. They're changing everything they do before they fail. That's the one thing that's different about the time now as to when even I came up. Nobody touched me until I failed. And then they go, okay, here's what we got to change. And so if you don't know how to handle the adversity, Nate's learning how to handle the adversity because it's the first time he's ever had it. Mm-hmm. So it's I'm excited to get back in the off season and have him back in the shop with all the other guys, Brady Singer and Daniel Norris and Woody and, you know, all the guys.
Yeah.
And we have this great group of guys that come in and work out, and to get him back in there is going to be a lot of fun. I'm super excited. He, you know, the one thing about Nate is he is such a good person. He's such a good kid. He's such a hard worker. He's got all the tools and attributes to be an all-star, not a good player, an all-star. And Nate himself has said he wants to be the greatest. I believe that he could be, with longevity, one of the best to do it. His stuff is dirty. He is dirty. You know, and I played with a guy named Javier Vasquez. Javier Vasquez, his first year getting called up, I can't remember. You probably could look up the numbers faster, but I want to say he was like 6-13 or 6-17 with a 6 ERA or something like that. He made $120 million in the game. You know, he pitched for 15 years. He was pretty good. He was above 500 guy. He threw 200 innings a year all the time, and he was dirty. He had so much in his arsenal. He never knew what to throw. He was like, well, I could throw my slider right here, or, oh, my changeup's good here. Oh, my fastball's really good here, but maybe I'll throw my curveball here. You know, so he didn't know what to throw. When he figured all that out and he learned how to handle his adversity, he was a consummate professional. Nate's going to do the same thing.
So with Nate,
I can't wait.
With Nate, you say he's cutting himself off. Are you just talking about like mechanics and his stride?
Yes. It's so important. I would say you have no idea, but you have an idea. Mechanics are important. I mean, it's not just arm strength, but your body is designed to do a certain thing. However your throwing mechanics go, right? And there's pitching gurus out there, and they talk about shortening everything up, cleaning up the arm, doing this, doing that. Well, if you shorten an arm path, you shorten a stride. If you shorten the stride, you can break the kinetic chain that's going down the mound. And if you watch Nate pitch, if I sent you video to how he used to pitch, you would see the 6'6 guy stay really tall at the beginning, stay on his backside, and then drive way down the mound and get that release point way out there like Ardolis Chapman. Ardolis Chapman, it's not just that he throws hard, but his stride is 7 feet long. Like, he looks like he's literally stepping on your toes and then throwing a fastball.
Yeah.
Nate used to be just like that. Now, if you go back and watch film on Nate, you'll see him land kind of short, and then his finish is kind of violent. We're going to smooth that out.
Well,
he has spent so much time with that biomechanic stuff. I'm sure he's just mixed everything.
It's too much information.
Yeah.
Once you here's what young players learn. Somebody's texting the piss out of me. Here's what young players learn. You can look at all the biomechanical stuff you want, and your numbers can be astronomical. But if your dumbass cannot get somebody out, nobody's going to care. Once you're at the big league level, you really honestly should focus on your ability to get guys out, not what you're doing spin rate wise, biomechanically, and all that stuff. Nobody gives a shit about that anymore. The team, the Toronto Blue Jays, don't care what Nate Pearson's spin rate is. If he goes out there, throws 102, snaps off a breaking ball, and strikes everybody out.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And his spin rate, let's say Nate's spin rate's 2100 on his curveball, and he strikes out the side on 3 curveballs. Nobody's going to give a shit. Nobody cares. Okay. Let's say his spin rate is 3200 on his breaking ball, and he can't locate it. Now all of a sudden we got a problem.
Yeah.
We got a problem because we can't put you out in the game. So when you that's why the mechanical stuff is so important. Hey, listen, I get it, the time that we're in, and I get it, these guys are smart and blah, 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 right? But they haven't thrown a ball off a mound. And, you know, when you're out there in Toronto and you're on the mound and you're facing down somebody, you're facing Giancarlo Stanton or whoever else you're facing, hey, you got to locate. If your body's not allowing you to locate, you're not going to get away with it very, very often. The hitters at the big league level are really freaking good. So you have to hone your skill and start to learn how to locate. You just can't throw stuff down there with movement and go, okay, I don't need to worry about location. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's where the rubber kind of meets the road on all the biomechanical stuff. You could do everything biomechanically and look good, but if you're not able to locate because of something you're doing wrong, it ain't gonna matter. And teams, you're a first round draft pick 5 years ago. You're a first round draft pick 5 years ago. They have 5 first round guys. Oh, by the way, Manoah's doing pretty good. I looked at the AAA earlier, and I love Nate with all my heart, and I watched him struggle, and I watched this kid Manoah pitching his ass off, and I was like, Nate's going to be in AAA all year. This kid's going to the big leagues, man. And that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, Nate's got to get back and get a bunch of people out of his ear and get back to who he was. I'll tell you what, and I'll never forget his name. When I signed with the Baltimore Orioles in 1987, this is a long ass time ago. the scout at my table was a guy named Faye Thompson. And he looked at me and he goes, I'm going to tell you something right now, and I don't want you to ever forget it. And I said, okay, what? And I'm some long haired, mustache wearing, you know, cocky ass college guy that thinks I'm going to go to the big leagues in a year and all this stupid stuff. He goes, when you sign, everybody's going to want to put their stamp on you and change you. He goes, don't. He goes, we're signed. You're a third round draft pick. You're an All-American. He goes, do you think that we think you're good enough to go to the big leagues just like you are? And I said, I hope so. And he goes, well, then don't change. He goes, everybody's going to want to do something. They're going to tinker with you. They're going to mess with you. He goes, until you fail, don't change anything. And that sucker was absolutely right.
That's great advice.
That makes so much sense, too, that a pitching coach or any sort of a coach would want to say, no, 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 the reason this guy's successful is because of the advice I gave him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wild.
Anthony, you're always so generous with your time. Thank you so much. Do you have enough in you for one more question here?
Yeah, absolutely. I got like one sip of coffee. You guys, we talked so long, my coffee's cold.
Yeah, me too. Yeah,
that's perfect. Yeah, here we go. Scott, before you jump in there, I just want to say about Nate Pearson. As a Blue Jays fan, I don't know how else to say how excited I am to hear that he's going to be back to working with you this offseason. I mean, you've been coaching him for a decade at this point. Yeah. You know him better than anyone. I'm just so excited to have him get back to you.
It really is, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, selfishly, I'll tell you too. I'm excited too because I love that kid with all my heart. He is, you know, of all the kids I've coached, and I've coached a bunch of kids, and again, you know, people that are watching a podcast, they have no idea who I am with these kids because I don't throw them out on social media. I choose to be quiet in who I train and how I train them and what we do. And honestly, my job is more of a mentor than a pitching coach. And it's just to try and help kids stay true to who they are and try and guide them because when I'm looking at a kid like Nate, right? Here's what I tell the kids. Do you know why? Here's why I'm good at this. I'm good at this for two reasons. The first one is I believe with all my heart, God has me anointed to do this kind of training. I just believe in all my heart. That's what I'm supposed to be doing right now. The other reason is I've already done it the wrong way. I already know how not to do it. Everything you do wrong in the big leagues, I've already done it wrong. Like I know what not to do. So when I say that, what I mean is I know the bumps and bruises you're about to take. I know what's going to happen when everybody gets in your ear. I know what could possibly happen if you go too far one way or the other. There's analytical data that's very important. We had analytical data when I was playing. We just didn't have it on our iPads. We had it on sheets of paper. Analytical data is super important. But getting guys out and learning your craft is absolutely the most important. It doesn't matter how you get them out. It matters that you get them out. And, you know, I played with seven teams, so I know what happens when you do something and you're not a star. You get to move on. And I don't want these kids to have to experience that kind of stuff. So, you know, when it comes to Nate and other guys, I'm going to spend all offseason trying to get Nate away from some of that stuff and back to who he really is. And if it happens, he is going to go to Toronto next year and you guys are going to be absolutely blown away at what he can accomplish because he's going to be freaking good.
His stuff. Okay. Elite. So here we go. Yeah. Last one. All right.
Last question. Okay.
And this one, it's funny because I read this the other day and it upset me. I was just like, and here's the thing. It's another guy connected to you, CJ Van Dyke, right? And maybe he's been on the show, so maybe this is why I'm a little biased. But there was a Baseball America scout who was at two of his starts and wrote something about him. And I'm paraphrasing here, but basically he said he looked dominant at times with top of the rotation stuff. And at times he looked like he would never get out of double A. And that kind of ticked me off because I'm just like, well, those are all of the options. Like you just said all of the things that could happen to a pitching prospect.
Yeah.
As a guy who coaches these kids, I can imagine stuff like this would get in their head and mess with them. Like, do you tell these kids, like, ignore that shit?
Yes. I tell them, listen, don't believe anything you see or read about yourself, whether it's positive or don't believe the positive stuff and don't believe the negative stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's these people's jobs to just be idiots. You know, it's just they say stupid stuff. You guys have a guy up there named Jack Todd. You know who that is?
No.
Jack Todd. You don't know who Jack Todd is? He works for the Globe and Mail. He used to fly in. He's this huge 6'8" reporter who moved to Canada in 1963 from the United, you figure it out. Okay. So he used to fly into Montreal and character assassinate a guy. And he used to have this article called Heroes and Zeros. And he would say heroes and he would say zeros. And he would just absolutely cut your throat. And it was just the most meanest, most malicious guy I'd ever seen write. And I couldn't stand the guy. And he wrote about me finally. I stayed off his radar for like 4 years. And then finally, when I had a surgery and I came back a little soon, and it was all my fault. It was my fault. I pressed Montreal into bringing me back. I shouldn't have. And we went to San Francisco, which is my hometown. And I got in a game, and I think I gave up a run or something in an inning or two innings. And then Felipe Alou brought me back the next day. And this is fresh off of surgery. I in no way, shape, or form was ready to go back-to-back days. And I gave up a grand slam to Marvin Bernard. And the next day, I walk in the clubhouse, and one of the guys goes, "God, Deli, man, what'd you say to Jack Todd? Like, he killed you today in his article." And I read the article, and he character assassinated me. He didn't say as much about, he said I sucked on the field, and that I was terrible in the clubhouse. And he said all kinds of crazy stuff. And I went outside and challenged him. And I should have never have done it. I should never have done it, but I did. And I won't tell you all the things that I said, that there's no way. But at the end of our conversation, he goes, "You know, I write about kids like you all the time, and I'm going to be here long after you're gone." That's what he told me. And I said, "Yeah, and you're going to be an asshole the whole time, and I'm going to be home with my wife and family who love me." And so I never, why would you pay attention to stuff that people say like that? Hey, go out and do your thing. Whatever God has for you, then that's what's going to happen. But with young kids, you get these guys who have a pencil in their hand, and they're a rodeo clown, and you know, they want to write about other people because they've never accomplished anything on their own. So, you know, what are you going to do? You just don't pay attention to it. You know, yeah. You just don't. You cannot.
It's hard not to. Like, I can imagine some of these kids, like, even though they've been told all the time, don't do it, are still there Googling their name.
Like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Stuff comes up, and it's hard not to do it. The best thing you can do is just let it roll off your back and just look at the source, right? They always say, consider the source. Consider the source. Some frustrated guy who writes for a living, it's his job to be controversial or whatever. The problem is guys do that stuff, and then they never stick around to see what the player has to say.
Yeah.
So, you know, so for some strange reason.
Yeah, shocking, right?
Yeah. CJ's like 6'3", 215 pounds. Like, it, you should never say something behind somebody's back that you wouldn't say to them right in their face. Yeah.
Well, what was made me upset about what they said about CJ is, like, he said nothing. Like, he literally, you could take every single pitching prospect and be like, he could be a top of the rotation guy, or he could never get out of Double A. It's like, yeah,
listen, that's like being a weatherman in Florida.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm looking outside right now, and it's got clear skies. I got a little breeze on the lake outside, and oh, by the way, 50% chance of showers. No shit, it's Florida. It can rain at 4 o'clock. I mean, you know, how hard is that?
Exactly. Well, Anthony, again, man, we can't thank you enough for your time. We always love chatting with you, buddy. Honestly, this is great, and we look forward to the next time.
Hey, yeah, man, just let me know, guys. I'm always up for it. We finished. My cup of coffee's all gone, so
we're all done.
Yeah,
so we're good. Time to go on with the game.
Hey, you guys do a great job, and just a shout out to you that I appreciate your podcast and all that. It's a lot of fun. It's good stuff for the people to listen to, and you have great guys on the show and stuff, so I just appreciate you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Oscar with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Long move.
Thanks for listening.